Good evening, everybody. We thank Rico and his staff for all the good they do and for the new mini-disc recorder, which is much more convenient. Leaves a lot less room for non-technical rabbis to make mistakes. And it's very light to carry, as a matter of fact. Also, tonight's class is dedicated by Solomon and Simcha Shami in memory of their grandparents. I'll give you the whole list. Shmuel Aharon ben Lulu, Yaakov ben Sultana Vida, Chaim ben Gilsom, Rachel bat Mazal, Adel bat Mazal, and Reina bat Chava Sultana. May the Torah we learn tonight serve for the zechut and aliyat nishmatam. Let's get some pages here. All you know, I have a very good friend, Rabbi Pesach Kron. Wonderful man. Really very special. We've been mentioning his new book, not to plug, but really to plug, Reflections of the Maggid, his sixth book. Oh, scroll. There's the cover. I have trouble with the covers. They all look very similar, but it's a very pretty cover. See, it reflects. That's the trick of the word reflection. See, it reflects. I'll be trying to get to it a little bit later. We did Hanukkah last week. It's been raising a lot of eyebrows, my anti-Hanukkah gifts spiel. I'm very happy it's getting some conversation. I think I'm 100% right. Sometimes I'm 90%. This is 100. But so this week we're going to do the parasha. Vayeshev Yaakov ve'ez migure aviv. This parasha and the next parasha and just these last few parashiyot, the Bereshit, they knock me out. I love them. I can't say I like them. I love them. As the story of Yosef and his brothers. And these are stories full of intrigue. They're fascinating. On Saturday night when we do the men's class, the questions are just popping out of the people. It talks about a spiritual conflict. It has dynamic personal relationships. And of course, lessons for us and for our midot. And usually we study the events and we're amazed that there's even any new questions, but there are. We find out of a new detail, a new facet of the story, which makes the familiar new again. Where's your mother? She didn't come tonight? She's playing hooky? Tonight, rather than tell the story or to delve into the intricacies of the plot, I want to highlight our sensitivities to one of the lessons. And it's a subject I talk about 3 or 4 times a year because it's very basic to our emunah. And that's called Hashgacha Peratit. Individual providence, that Hashem is watching each and every one and controlling every detail of our lives. And we go through our lives and deep down in our hearts, we know that Hashem is in charge. That's for sure. We know He's in complete control of history. No king is born. No president is elected with the Chads, without the Chads. All that stuff is all details to confuse you. No government rises or falls. There's no 9/11s, with all the stories that happened 9/11. And there's no royal decrees, good or bad, that happen without the control and the direction of our Father in Heaven. So if you look at the story, brief outline, Yosef is approximately 18 years old, 17 when the parasha starts. So in that year, he's sold by his brothers to a caravan heading for Egypt. He spends 12 years in jail after the incident with Potiphar's wife. Then there's 7 years of plenty, the blessing from the dreams of the fat cows. And then there's 2 years of famine. And finally, 22 years later, his father Yaakov comes to Mitzrayim, to Egypt, with his entire family. That was way before your family. 2 years before. Hashem's plan to begin the Galut Mitzrayim, the exile in Egypt, and that's only a prelude to Yitziat Mitzrayim, the Exodus, which is only an introduction to the splitting of the sea, which is only really to get us ready for Matan Torah, and then entering Eretz Yisrael. It's all one story. It's all connected. In fact, it's even connected to us today. But to give you all those details, I'd have to be a very much better historian than I am. Let's look through a couple of things. The brothers, who it says the word jealous, and as we learn, we don't use those words. Like kanu bo ehav, they have these feelings that we call jealousy about Yosef, because of the dreams, because of the father's favoritism, because of the coat, and they go out to watch the sheep out of town with his good grazing. And Yaakov Avinu Alav HaShalom sends Yosef to check on them and to check on the sheep. And the plot goes in motion where they decide to kill him. And Reuven intervenes and they decide to throw him in the pit pending the outcome. What they're going to do. And it tells us, Vayeshvu le'echol lechem. They sat down to eat bread, which is what the judges do after they make a verdict. Vayis'u einehem. They lift up their eyes. Vayir'u, and they see, v'hine orechat yishme'elim. They see a caravan of Muslims. Ba'a mi'gil'ad, coming from Gil'ad. Ugmaleim nosot nechod v'tzari velot, and the camels are carrying all kinds of perfumes. Holchim lehorid mitzrayma, in the direction to go down and bring this freight that they're carrying to Egypt. So Rashi, the primary commentator on the Torah, it's a very basic question. The Torah doesn't really want to tell us stories. It's not a history book. It's a teaching book. And it doesn't have unnecessary details. And it happens to say all these little facts about what the camels were carrying. And really, 3,500 years later, what do we care? And if they were carrying gumballs or candy or Pashkes candy, would you care? What does that have to do with history and the story? And he writes, Lama persem hakatuv et masa'am. Why did the Torah, the Katuv, publicize what the camels were carrying? And he answers, Lehodia matan zecharan shesaddikim, to tell us how Hashem rewards the righteous. She'en dakam shel araviim laset ela neft ve'etran v'sherechamra. Usually they carry naphtha and fuels from one area of Arabia to another area. They were freighters. These people on these caravans, they carried horrible smelling stuff all the time. And they carried, and they themselves smell too, by the way. So this is what it normally smells like. Like your cab driver this morning. Same idea. Nothing changed. V'lazen izdamnu b'samim shelo yuzak me'achla. Hashem knew that this caravan is going to carry the young man in chains to Mitzrayim called Yosef. Yosef is a tzaddik, a righteous person. Hashem didn't want him to suffer. So if CNN was reporting it, or if it was on the highlights of the year, which is going to be all the new programs now, the highlights of the year, it would say, and it just so happened that this caravan was carrying the latest perfume from Calvin Klein. Yimach Shemo v'zichro. And I mean that. Don't buy his products. He's a pervert. So you have that. You have that. He is. You don't think so? In his personal life, in his advertising, in his business, in his morals. Don't buy his products. You know, buy Ahava. Give Israel some business. Smells nicer anyhow. So, the nice smelling stuff is on this caravan, not by chance, but because Hashem is in control, and although Hashem's plan requires that Yosef, for whatever reasons Hashem has, must be sold, must be captured, must go to Egypt in chains. Why should he smell kerosene? For how many days it took for him to get there. I'll put some nice smelling perfume and don't let him suffer so much. Not only that, Midrash tells us, Yosef, who was very much a Baal Bitachon, who had total trust in Hashem. He's one of the primary examples of a Baal Bitachon. He had so much Bitachon, when he slipped a little bit and said two words to the wine steward, it'll be one of the stars of tonight's class, when he said two words to the wine steward, please mention me and don't forget me. When he said that, those two words, because of that, he was such a Baal Bitachon, that for a normal person that would be alright, but he, it's considered a negative, and Hashem gave him 2 extra years in jail. For slipping. So he sees the Baal Bitachon, Hashem knew, if I put this nice smelling stuff, this tzaddik, who would normally say Gamzula Tova anyhow, this is for good also, will pick up on the hint. You know this perfume? This is not what these Arabs usually carry. This is Hashem's act. My brothers don't know what they're doing. They're just messengers. Hashkacha Piratit. So he goes to jail, he comes out of jail next week. Vahim ikech nataim yamim, uparo cholem v'nei omed al ha'or. You read the parasha, it'll be the second Shabbat Chanukah this year. Vahim ikech nataim yamim, at the end, it was at the end of 2 years, and Paro had a dream, and here he is, he's standing on the river, he's standing on the water, and the cows come out of the water, the fat cows, the skinny cows, you all know the story. It's probably an Uncle Moshe song by now. So now, we know all this. Vahim ikech nataim is backwards. It should have said, Paro had a dream after 2 years. 2 years after what? After Yosef told the wine steward, don't forget me. But that's not what it says. It says, and it was at the end of 2 years, and Paro had a dream. As if the key point is the 2 years, and it is. We might say, Paro had a dream, nobody can interpret it, and that's how Yosef got out of jail. Right? You know the story, right? But that's not what happened. It was time for Yosef to come out of jail. And so Hashem made Paro have a dream that disturbed him. The dream was Hashem's vehicle to get him out of jail. And it was time to happen on the night when the jail sentence was up. The dream wasn't the cause of him getting out of jail. The fact that he was supposed to get out of jail was the cause for the dream. Hashkacha Piratit. Hashem is in charge. So he comes out, he stands there, he tells the Perush, he becomes appointed as what? He becomes appointed to be the second in command. En chacham v'navon. There's nobody as smart as you, as wise as you. Who's going to be the head of Homeland Security? That's today's key buzzword, right? The new guy. The old guy became the new guy. Now that they have the thing, he got the job. So now we have Homeland Security. Who's going to do Homeland Security? Here, this young man predicted we're going to have 7 years of bounty and 7 years of famine. Right? They're going to have 7 years of bounty, 7 years. Well, if we squander away the bounty, we'll starve during the famine. So what do I need? So Yosef tells them what he needs. You need somebody to organize it. You got to set up warehouses. You got to put away stuff for the future. Don't squander away your money. I tried to tell this to my family. They don't listen. The NASDAQ was 5,000. Now it's 1,500. They don't listen. And they want to live the same. I don't get it. But that's what Yosef told them. Listen, everything comes in a cycle. After the good's going to come to bad, the fat cows are going to be swallowed by the skinny cows. And how are we going to live? You got to prepare. So Paro says, you know something? You're a genius. You may be an 18-year-old young Jew, but you're a genius. I want you to be the guy. And then he does something very, very seemingly insignificant. The Pasuk tells us, he should make him the chief, and he's going to collect everything. It's going to save you. Paro accepts the advice. Is there anybody like this guy? He says, you know something? I pick you. And now that I made you the thing, I take off my ring, I put it on you, I put on special clothes, very special clothing to show royalty, and he put him on a chariot, and they rode him through all of Mitzrayim. Vayikra Faro calls Shem Yosef, he changes his name. Safinat Pa'aneach. And he gives him this girl called Asenat Bat Potiphera Kohen On Isha, and Yosef becomes the ruler. It seems like, a balancon everybody. Safinat Pa'aneach, for those of you in Tape Land, there's a wedding about 30 feet from us, and we're blessing everybody here that they should find him. And her, for this side of the room. So it says he named him a new name. He gave him like an Egyptian name, and the name means that you are able to see things, safun, hidden, you reveal the hidden, and some all kinds of fantastic meanings to the name. But you know what happens? 9 years later, count them, nine. Who remembers 9 years ago? What happened on November 25th, 1993? Anybody remember where you were? You don't remember, right? It's 9 years ago. What was the headline in the Times that day? Anybody remember? What was the fantastic music they played on News Radio 88? Boom, 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 boom. Saddam, blah, blah, blah. What'd they say? Do you remember? You don't remember. It's a long time ago, right? 9 years after this day in the parasha, the brothers are standing in front of Yosef. They were captured for they came to buy food, and they don't recognize him. And when they tell the people, who is this guy? They don't say, Yosef, the Jewish kid from Canaan. Oh, that's Safinat Paneach. And they don't recognize him. He has a beard, doesn't look the same. He got a different name. He's dressed like an Egyptian. Hashem made Paro change his name to protect him from being recognized by his brothers. 9 years later, when they stood there with the translator, who happened to be their nephew, his son was the translator, their own nephew is translating, and they have no idea what it is. You know why? In front of his desk, like in the UN, it says, delegate from Egypt, Safinat Paneach. It doesn't say Yosef. So Hashem put the idea in Paro's head to change his name. Hashkacha Peratit. Says the Pasuk, Vayar Yosef et Ehav Vayakirem. He saw his brothers and he recognized them. Vehem lo hikiruhu. They didn't recognize him. But now I want to get to the one that's fun. Those are just, I can give you 30 examples of Hashgacha Peratit in this story. And remember, we started Vayeshev Yaakov, Ele Toledot Yaakov Yosef, Haya Ben Sheva Esrei Shana. He was 17 when the Parashta starts this week. In Miketz, next week, when he's standing before Paro, he's 30. When the 7 years of good are going on, he's 37. By the time Yaakov comes, he's 39. Time is flying. You know, there's a newspaper every day, there's things that happen every day, and everything is part of the plot. Everything is being controlled by Hashem. But watch this one. He's in jail. He's in jail for the false charges that the wife of Potiphar brought against him. And then something fantastic happens. I turned a couple of pages here. And he gets put, he gets put in prison. Right? Now, how many prisons do you think there were in Egypt? Egypt was the country, the biggest, most powerful country on earth at the time. So you gotta figure it had a pretty good federal prison system. Right? Like any other country. But which prison is he put in? Vayikach Adonai Yosef Oto. The master of Yosef, that means Potiphar, takes Yosef, Vayitineu El Bet Asar, and he puts him in jail. But the Torah bothers to point out, it's not just any jail. Mekom Asher Asire HaMelech Asurim. The place where when the king puts somebody in jail, that's the prison they put them in. Got it? By Hisham Bevet Asor, and he's there. The Pasuk is fantastic. It's like a setup. And he's there. He just happens to be there. So you fall for it, hook, line, and sinker. He's in jail. Did you notice that it says it's the one where the... You never noticed that before. Come on. Anybody ever noticed that before? It's the one where the royal prisoners are put. By Hashem et Yosef, he's in the jail. By Yet Elav Hased, the warden starts to like him. He sees something nice about him, this quality called hen. Everybody sees him, likes him, a balankon. By the way, for all you Ashkenazic friends I have here tonight, a balankon means you should have the same. I don't know how to say it in Yiddish. But there must be something like that. You know, there must be. So, and now everybody who comes to this royal prison ends up under the domain of the second in command of the prison, who? Yosef. Suddenly he says, and then, right after. So Rashi says, oh Rashi, this is fantastic. This is one, I got a lot of favorite Rashi's, like about 3,000 of them. Like everyone is unbelievable. But this one here is really, really, really in my top 10 list. Watch what it says. Vayhi achara divarim ha'ele. And then it was after these incidents. In other words, the Pasuk is telling us, after the scene is set, now the action begins. After this, you know what happens? The wine steward and the baker of Paro, hatu, they sinned. In other words, they did something wrong. To their master, the king of Egypt. He gets angry with his two officers. These two guys. Vayiten otam b'mishmar, he puts them in jail. Mekom asher Yosef asur sham, It just happens to be the place where Yosef is spending time. Rashi. Ahad ha-divarim ha-ila. After the scene with the wife of Potiphar and the scene and the scandal. You got to picture this. You saw the paper today with the Central Park jogger? Big news, right? Well, imagine the wife of this unbelievably high officer in government claims that she was molested by the Jewish slave boy. And she's screaming about this incident. And everybody comes with CNN and NBC and all the newspapers and Marla Diamond from W. All these people come. And there they are. It's the biggest news in town. Everybody's talking about the rotten Jew. Right? You can imagine the next... The Jews, that's how they are. You can't trust those guys. You should never leave them home with your wife and children. That's how they are. Right? You can imagine the haki, right? The talk. Watch Rashi. Lefi shehigila oto arura. Otara. Because this cursed woman, arura, this lowlife, put him in the mouth of everybody. Tasadik Yosef. Bifi kulam ledaberbo. Since she made him the hot news topic, she, her accusation, made the gossip all about him. What happened? Hevi lahem akadosh baruch hu sinchanam shel elu. Hashem made an event the next morning that these two officers in government sinned against the king. Watergate! Big news! Something fantastic! Clinton and Monica. Something that everybody could talk about. Just so they won't talk about Yosef anymore. You heard the words? Lefi shehir gilad, agil. She made him the hot topic. Et ha-sadiq b'fi kulam nedaber bo. Hevi lahem ha-kadosh baruch hu. Sheyifnu aleihem v'lo elav. So they pay attention to the new scandal and not talk about him anymore. Isn't that great? Isn't that how it works? Everything's a scandal till the next scandal. It was like that in Egypt 3,300 years ago. We thought it took the newspapers and Jay Leno and these jerks on the radio to make things hot. Whatever Hannity says we talk about, we don't think. If he says this is what's important, that's what we talk about today, right? And if he changes the subject tomorrow, that's the new subject. And then, the reason you thought, Rashi brings as the second reason. What's the second reason? Ve'od, and also, she'tavo harvacha la'tzadik al-yedehem, so that he will find space, he will be released through these people. That's the second reason. The first reason Rashi brings is so that people won't talk about the tzaddik. So the whole government scandal, the big news in Egypt came about so that tzaddik would not be part of a lewd, sordid story and the gossip. Isn't that fantastic? Did you notice? You knew this already? You didn't notice. This is amazing. It's amazing chidush. This is how Hashem's running the world. You think it's this and it's that and it's Saddam and it's Arafat and it's Iran today and it's Syria tomorrow and it's an earthquake and depends what he wants to do. Maybe if you weren't talking about that, it would be harmful to somebody Hashem doesn't want harmed. Maybe if you were looking in this direction, you would see something he doesn't want you to see in the other direction. Hashem is pulling the strings. And then Rashi continues, Chat'u, it says they sinned. What'd they do? Doesn't say. What were the crimes that fit under this word, Chat'u? They sinned. You know what it is? But I met Jack today, he's a very cute kid. Jack Nissim, you know? Jacob. Your nephew. Yeah, come here. Yeah. Cute kid. Very good. How do you know that? So says Rashi, Ze nimsa zevu v'pale potirim shelo, v'ze nimso saror begluskim shelo. This guy, the wine steward, a fly was found in the cup, and the baker, there was a little pebble, a stone, in his cookies. Gluskia, I guess a nice word for cookie, right? I think cake. So why were they arrested? They were arrested because of their crimes. One served the king wine with a fly in it, and one served the king coffee cake with a stone in it. And for that, they were thrown in jail. Siftei Chachamim asks an interesting question. How do you know that the stone wasn't in the wine and the fly wasn't in the cake? We know it was a stone and a fly. How come we don't know it wasn't reversed? You ever think of that one? You didn't think of that one either. Tell your girls are sleeping tonight. It's the heat in this room. You need some air conditioning. And why do two of them have to get arrested? If Hashem wants to get him out, let one guy get arrested. Let that guy have a dream. We'll take him out. Two guys have to get arrested. Well, if one guy got arrested, and that guy was the wine steward, and he had a dream, and Yosef HaSadiq interpreted the dream, and he told him, listen, you're getting out, the king's birthday's coming, he's letting you out, don't worry about a thing, and don't forget me. The guy gets out, he said, you know this guy? He was flattering me. That's the way he is. He tells people he interprets dreams. He tells everybody a good interpretation. Sometimes it comes true, sometimes it doesn't, but he's full of baloney. But when he says, listen, you baker, you're dying, and you wine steward, you're living, and the other guy gets hung, now he's got to believe this guy is not flattering anybody. If he's flattering, he doesn't tell the guy he's getting hung. So now he starts to believe what he did, so that when Paro has a dream 2 years later, and nobody can interpret the dream, this guy stands up and says, you know, there's this Jewish slave boy. I mean, I don't want to give him a recommendation, but I just want you to know, I was in jail, and me and the other guy, we had the dream, and he said the other guy was going to die, and he died, he said I was going to get out, and that's what happened. But if it was only him, he'd say, you know, the guy's flattering me. It happened that I got out. You got what I'm saying? That's why there's two. But I'm back to the question. Don't think I forgot. I didn't forget. What was the question? You're taking notes. I can answer the question. How come the rock was in the bread, the cake, and the fly was in the wine? You got to keep track of this stuff. Boy, you guys used to pay attention. I don't know what happened. I think the wedding's taking everybody's mind away here.
I don't think you can find the fly in the cake.
Why not? I got news. I find everything and stuff. I tell you. But processed food, you find anything you want. I hate to tell you what they find in food. Besides broken glass and stuff, they find, you know, from rodents and stuff, they find it in the food. From the cleanest places. So, why the fly in the cup and the stone in the bread? How do we know it wasn't the opposite? Siftei Chachamim answers. Dilma Ifchaya, he says. Maybe it was the opposite. Yesh lomar da'al korchach sarich lomar dikacha v'amaseh. There's no, you have to come out that this is the way it was. Because if it was the other way around, then we'd have a problem with why did he hang the baker. You see, inim salisara mashkim zivuv, if the fly flies into the wine, and he doesn't blame the guy so much, he says, listen, there's flies all over the palace. One happened to end up in the wine. It's an open cup of wine. We put the wine outside the sukkah for the bees. You know, they're attracted to. What do you want from the guy? Is that negligence? Maybe he had a perfect cup of wine, but the fly came. So he lets the guy go. because it could have been at the last second that this fly went in. It's not negligence on the part of the wise steward. But when you find a rock in the cake, now you say, wait a minute. Did he sift it properly? Did he work in a clean area? Pebbles don't walk and they don't fly and they don't run into cakes. The guy who baked it has something to do with it. So that's how we know that the rock was in there, because he hung the guy for it. If a fly ended up in the cake, he got the same excuse. The guy was making dough. He put it on the side to rise. Some fly went in. What do you want from the guy? But that's a nice little gimmick to explain what. But I want you not to miss the point here. And here's my main point tonight. Now you get out the red pens. Put away all the blue pens and the black pens. Get out the red pens now with the highlighters. What's Hashem's plan? Hashem's plan is to bring the Jewish people down to Mitzrayim. That's the real plan. All this other stuff is the details. And the Midrash tells us, Yaakov Avinu Alav HaShalom could have been brought down in chains if Hashem wanted. He could have worked out the story. They arrest him, they bring him down in chains, and he ends up in Mitzrayim. But Hashem preferred to draw him down gently and respectfully. And so the entire story of Yosef transpires. The Midrash even uses a mashal. A mother cow. They make the calf cry, and the mother cow comes willingly to milk it, to feed it. He puts his son in Mitzrayim. He gets a message, your son is there, and he comes down with his whole family. With insurances, he has to build the yeshiva, he has to get a place separate, Goshen. Well, no, that's details. But Hashem wants Yaakov in Mitzrayim. He wants Jacob in Egypt. No two ways about it. And that's the object. Now, we all heard in our lifetimes, Harbeh Shiluchim Lamakom. There are many messengers Hashem could use. He has a lot of servants, could do what he wants. In fact, everything does what he wants. Look at the fly and the pebble. 11, 12 years before we need him here in Mitzrayim, before Yaakov's supposed to come down, Hashem uses two of his tools, two of his messengers to get the story in motion. A pebble and a fly. From his holy throne in Shamayim, the command goes out. Put that fly in the cup, put that stone in the cake. Yaakov has to come to Mitzrayim. Tell me which newspaper is going to report that. It's not even newsworthy. They're into the scandal of Yosef with the woman. They're into the scandal of the two guys with the thing. They're into everything. Are they saying that the pebble and the fly are messengers of God to get Yaakov to Mitzrayim? Nobody has any ideas. And in fact, when he comes down, they don't even go back with the news of the year in review to 11 years later, to when he actually comes down. Chazal say, Al yedei hakol oseh shelichuto. Hashem does his everything is done through his messengers. Afil al yedei nechashim va'akrabim. Even snakes and scorpions. Everybody is a messenger from Hashem. Gemara Berachot. Art scroll is 60B. In fact, I think it's 60B1 because it's near the top of the page. It might be 60B2. Sometimes they talk a lot. Rabbi Akiva. This is the famous Gamzu Letova story called the Avid Rachamana Letav Avid. Everything that God does is for good. That's Rabbi Akiva's slogan. So he has to go somewhere. He gets to the town. He's expecting somebody to put him up. The person he's expecting to put him up doesn't put him up. He goes to every motel in town. There must be a jeweler's convention or something. There's no rooms. He knocks on a couple of doors. Nobody takes him in. What does he do? He goes out of town, on the outskirts of town, and he camps. He doesn't mind. He has a rooster to wake him up to pray in the morning. He has a donkey to carry his personal belongings and carry him. And he has a candle, so he's not out in the dark at night. The wind comes and blows out the candle. Rabbi Akiva says, "Call David Rachamana Letav Avid. What do you want me to do? The candle blew out. Hey, quiet, please. The candle blew out. He's out there in the dark. It's not exactly civilized. Picture this, you're in the West Bank. You don't want to be there. Like he's on the outskirts of Ramallah and it's dark. The candle blew out. Does he get upset? You know. Call David Achamar Tabavid. If Hashem did it, it's for the best. The wind is Hashem's messenger. It blew out the candle. Then a cat comes. Cat comes and eats his rooster. There goes his alarm clock. What does he say? Oh, my rooster. No, he says, Kol David Rachmana Letav Avid. Hashem said the cat to kill the rooster. I don't know why, but it's for the best. And then a lion comes. Imagine where he's sleeping. He's out there in the dark without his rooster. And a lion comes and kills his donkey. Now he can't even travel if he wants to travel. I wouldn't stay in that neighborhood for anything anymore. Right? Call David Rachamana Letav Avid. That's what he says. All that Hashem does is for the best. He's sleeping. And during the night, marauders come to the town he was supposed to sleep. They kill and pillage everybody in the town. And Rabbi Akiva wakes up in the morning to a scene of devastation. And he looks at the candle that's not lit, and the rooster that's dead, and the donkey that's dead, and he says, "You see, call David Rachamana Letav Avid. All that Hashem does is for the best. If my candle was lit, who says they wouldn't have followed up by coming to get me? And if my donkey brayed or my rooster crowed, they would have located me. And just like they pillaged and killed everybody else, they would have killed me. But Hashem wanted Rabbi Akiva alive. And so Hashem sent his wind and his cat and his lion to take care of him." Now we get to stories, Yosef, Rabbi Akiva, David HaMelech is now king. And these people don't really want him to be king. And there's a revolution. And now, of course, the country is split. Certain people supporting him. Certain people against him. Well, he's traveling with his officers. Famous Shim'i ben Gera comes out. He starts throwing rocks at the king. He starts cursing the king. The officer reaches for his sword to kill this man who's cursing the king. It's subject to death. You don't need a trial. You're cursing the king. You're throwing rocks at the king. Off with his head. David says, "No. Let him curse. He's not cursing. Hashem sent him to curse." David HaMelech doesn't see an enemy. He doesn't see a man cursing him. He sees Hashem at every turn. He sees Hashgacha Peratit. But these stories from Tanakh, sometimes I give these classes, and yeah, thousands of years ago, and the Tanakh, and prophets, and great people. How about the 20th century? I know we're in the 21st, but how about the 20th? Close enough, right? Just about 80 years ago, a little more than 80 years ago, maybe 85, there's a man in Russia, a Jew, and he's a jeweler. And I don't know what the 47th Street was of Russia, but they had a place that was the market, just like 47th Street. But they didn't have security, and they didn't have alarm systems, they didn't have safes. Every night, the people would carry home their little bag of merchandise, put it away safely, and come back to their shop the next morning. One of the vendors, this Jewish man, agreed with his partner to open early because it was what we call a market week. A lot of the big buyers were in from all over Europe. And so he promised he would get there by 8 o'clock, let's say. I don't know the exact time, but he said, I'll get there by 8 o'clock. So he leaves his house a little extra early, and he tries to take a little shorter route than he normally takes to work. And he passes by a little synagogue, and there's a man standing there, and in his best Yiddish, he's looking for the tenth man. Tenser? Something like that. What do they call the tenth man? Censor? Censor. Good. They're looking for the tenth man. Listen, I taught you about Anko and you could teach me something. So now, he's outside the shul. Tenth man. This guy's walking by. He obviously is Jewish. And now he looks him right in the eye and says, Mister, you got to help us. You're the tenth man. He says, I'd love to help you, but I got to get to the market. I have an important appointment. And the buyers are coming, and I got to be there early today. He says, but mister, you don't understand. We need you for the tenth man for a minion. He tells him, you don't understand. I can't stay. I left my house early. I'm taking this shortcut through all these alleys just to get there. I never knew the shul existed, and I don't come here. I'm sure you always have 10. You'll wait for somebody else. He says, mister, it's my yahrzeit. I have to say Kaddish for my father. You got to help us and be the 10th man. He says, mister, you don't understand. I got to go. He tells him, it was your father. And I was the tenth man. What would you want me to do? Okay. So he goes in the shul. And he goes in the shul. And there's not 9 other people there. There's about 7. He tells them, I thought you said I'm the tenth man. He says, yeah, everybody's the tenth man. We need everybody. Don't worry, they'll be here. We're not too prompt. We're not yuckies. Another guy comes, and he's watching his clock. I'm not going to be the 8 anymore. I guess I'm going to be the 8:10. I'm going to be the 8:15. I don't know. It depends how fast they dive and how fast they pray. I don't know. He's getting nervous. Finally, he sees 9 guys. He tells the man, mister, I tried. And the truth is, if it was my father's yahrzeit, I'd want you to stay. You broke my heart with your story, but I gotta go. He says, how could you leave me without saying Kaddish for my father? He says, but you don't have 10 guys with me or without me. He says, no, somebody's coming. He promised he's coming. He tells him, okay, I'll wait another 5 minutes, but then I'm going. And he takes out a Tehillim and he sits and reads Tehillim for 4 minutes and 30 seconds, 4 minutes, 45 seconds. And just as he's about to leave, the 10th man shows up. Good. Good. Except you never heard this old man pray. This old man didn't think it was market week. He thought it was Yom Kippur. And he's praying word by word, slowly but surely, and this guy is crawling out of his skin. And he says, what did I get myself into? But now I'm stuck. There's exactly 10. I'm the 10th. If I walk out, Well, finally, which seems like a lifetime later, they finish. He gets up to leave. The man says, you're not going to have schnapps and a piece of cake? Which is the custom on your sites, in Ashkenazic communities. You say a beracha, le'ilu nishmat the person. He goes, I don't know how they do it at 7:30 in the morning, but they have schnapps and they have cake. The cake, I understand, with coffee, not with Jack Daniels, you know. Come on. Not only that, the guy buying it, he wants a little nishmat, but he doesn't want his pocketbook to get smaller. He doesn't buy the blue label or the black label. He's buying the cheap stuff. So now he says, I got to go. He says, no, you got to have something. So he has something. He says, listen, I'm late. Well, he finally gets out of the shul. And he starts to head for the market. And as he heads down the main street towards the market, he hears noise and he sees people running towards him. Just like those scenes you've seen of people running away from the World Trade Center. People running through the streets all in one direction. There's something behind them. He grabs one man by the shirt. He says, what's going on? He says, the Bolsheviks took over. They're pillaging everything. They're killing and robbing everybody in the market. It's a madhouse. There's no control. He tucks his little bag under his arm and he starts running in the other direction. And he starts to think to himself, imagine if I was in my office at 8:00 like I was supposed to. Who saved him? The man? The schnapps? The cake? Hashkacha piratit. That wasn't his day to die. It was his day to escape. And with all his plans and all the business he planned to do and getting there early and his agreement with his partner doesn't mean anything. Hashem decided he was going to walk up that street. That man would be outside. He'd tell him he's the 10th, even though they had 7. He'd make him wait, and he would be saved. Sometimes it's a snake. Sometimes it's a pebble. Sometimes it's a fly. But it's always Hashem. That's called Hashkacha Piratit. And since I brought Pesach Kron's new book, let's see what he has. This is called Reflections of the Magid. For those of you who didn't buy it yet, it's on page 186 when you buy it tomorrow. Rabbi Yehuda Lieb Whitler, a Rebbe in one of the yeshivot in Gateshead, England. One of the students, whose name was changed, was always misbehaving. And he had a bad influence on his classmates and other kids in the dormitory. And he lived too far to travel back and forth to the yeshiva every day. But his behavior made it impossible for him to stay in the dormitory. So they want to expel him. Well, you can't keep him in the dormitory. He can't go home. There's no choice. Get rid of him. So after discussing the matter with his wife, Rabbi Whitler tells the administration that he has a 3-story home, and on the 3rd floor he has an attic room, like a guest room, and he'll take this young boy and let him live there. Now he's not in the dormitory, he has a place to live, he can stay in school. And he'd have free food, he'd have good children that could be an influence on him, Rabbi Whitley's children. And he'd be responsible for getting to yeshiva on time. One Friday afternoon, Rabbi Whitley's on the way to shul with his 5-year-old son. And the 5-year-old says, "Daddy, I forgot my Shabbat yarmulke in the house. We have to go back." So the rabbi tells his son, "Run home and get it. I'll wait for you right here." And since they were only a block from the house, he could watch his son on the street run home. And his son ran home. He picked up the yarmulke from his parents' room where it was kept. He, of course, turned on the light, and he forgot to turn it off. Friday afternoon, late. Some of you have been in that fix before. You know, the light that was left on by mistake, always in a bedroom. So after the family ate, and they're ready to go to bed for the night, they saw the light was on. And Rabbi Whitler, of course, immediately figured out what happened. And he looked outside. He saw it was pretty late. They sang a little too much and ate a little too much. And there were no goyim on the street. And he lived in a totally Jewish neighborhood. So he said, "You know, the light's on and the light's on. I'll try and sleep Friday night. Who can't sleep? You know, if the sun is shining in your room, you could probably fall asleep. The problem is to stay awake, not to fall asleep." So he goes in his room. He tries to go to sleep. To no avail. So he goes back downstairs to the main floor. He starts looking at a new sefer he picked up that he was interested for a long time, never had time for. But after half an hour, his eyes were drooping, but he still couldn't sleep. Then he thought of an idea. On the third floor, next to the room where this young man lived, there was a second room. It was empty. It was dark. But it had an old bed in it. "You know, maybe I'll go up there." So he goes up to the third floor. He puts a fresh sheet on the mattress. And he's tossing and turning on it. It feels like nails, you know, sleeping on a bed of nails. He could feel every spring. He could feel everything in the bed. And he can't sleep. He starts to sleep, wake up, very restless. He rolls over one time, and he hears crackling noise. He tries to pay attention, where is it coming from? And he smells smoke. He runs from his room, and he sees smoke coming under the door from the room next to him. On the third floor. He opens the door and he sees fire. And he sees the young boy lying on the ground, surrounded by fire on the carpet. He grabs him and together they run downstairs. It seems that the boy wanted to read something and he was lying on the carpet and he put the lamp on the carpet, fell asleep, and the heat from the lamp put the carpet on fire. The rabbi woke up his wife and his children, and they all escaped the house. The fire brigade came, they stopped the fire, and of course the entire third floor was burnt. Rabbi Whitler tells this story many times and says Rabbi Krohn, each time he ends it by asking the same question, "Was it really terrible that my son left the light on in the room? That was the only reason I ended up on the third floor and had the opportunity to smell the smoke before the fire spread. What seemed like a bothersome inconvenience actually was the catalyst for the rescue of a family. Sometimes we get answers immediately, and other times it takes longer. In the story of Yosef, I gave you 11 years and 20 years. And in Purim, it took 12 years. And who knows what's going on now? Is it part of 1948 and the state of Israel being declared a state? Is it the Jews returning in the Balfour Declaration 1917? Is it the first settlers who came back in the 19th? What is this story unfolding? What is Hashem's plan? Who is Al-Qaeda? What is Bush? What about Florida and the Chads? What does this all have to do with everything? Earthquakes in Mexico? I don't know. But I could tell you one thing. It's all Hashem. He's running the show. He's in charge of everything. And call the Avid Rahamana. And everything that Hashem does, the Tav Avid, is for the best. It's for good. If you live with that trust and that faith, you won't be crisis obsessed like the yo-yos on the radio would like you to be, so you'll listen a little more. Get your 5 minutes of news every day. You'll be very enlightened and know what's going on in the world. You'll be able to talk over coffee and nobody will think you're dumb or stupid. But you don't really have to live with every detail. Hashem is running the show. And that lesson is very important. And that's the lesson of this week's parasha. And we could sit here all night and I'll bring you 20 more incidents that show word by word that that's the lesson Hashem wants us to get. I'm in charge of everything, even a pebble and a piece of cake. See you next week.